Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So, Theresa May is still trying to work out how to get her deal through. There's a chance of a meaningful vote next week, but if that doesn't happen, it will happen in 2 weeks' time. Not helping matters is a growing Brexiteer backlash. And today, Nick Timothy, her former chief of staff, has added to her problems by saying that he thinks the Prime Minister always saw Brexit as a damage limitation exercise. James, is this going to mellow those Leave MPs who are getting quite anxious about Theresa May's plans?
I don't think it's going to mellow MPs who are anxious about Theresa May's plans. I think it fits into a broader question, though, which is I think there are a decent chunk of the various people in the European Research Group get very cross when anyone points this out. But there are definitely some MPs who voted against Theresa May's deal last time round who might be prepared to hold their nose and vote for it a second time round if they thought that the trade talks were going to be conducted by somebody else, somebody who, to go back to what you were just saying about Nick Timothy, someone who, Nick Timothy says that Theresa May regards Brexit as a damage limitation exercise. What these MPs want is someone who regards it as an opportunity to negotiate the trade deal. So I think I think it will probably flip attention back onto the whole question of would things be different with somebody else. I think there are undoubtedly some Brexiteers like Andrea Jenkins out this morning saying basically she's not planning to vote for this even with a change to the backstop. But I think there is this ticking clock now, which is if Theresa May's deal hasn't passed by the 12th, I think nearly everyone expects the House of Commons to vote against no deal on the 13th and then for an extension on the 14th. And the point about voting for an extension is you're not voting, you're voting to request an extension, not for an extension. And that raises the whole issue of how long would the EU insist on it being and what conditions they would attach to it.
I mean, so Christopher Mayer, who's our former ambassador in Washington, made a good point this morning saying if you look at the noises coming out of Spain and France, they're already starting to list the conditions for granting to this extension. They're not going to be very pleasant conditions. He was saying that their intention is to make Britain into a kind of Oliver Twist forever asking for more. And I think this does, I mean, so many of these scenarios come up and down, but this brings back the scenario of no deal. Because say a Parliament instructs the Prime Minister to ask for an extension, it can't really instruct her to get one. They can only get one with the EU's agreement. So she might ask, they might come up with conditions she can't meet, and then what? So it's difficult to think, even with the kind of no deal votes we're going to have, to see a way where you're going to deal with all various scenarios. We could still have no deal by July. Although it's funny, I never think of likely scenarios. I think of least unlikely scenarios. I think the second least unlikely scenario is us being forced into this sort of never-ending negotiation. But the least unlikely scenario is that Cox comes back with some kind of fig leaf and that other Eurosceptics will use that as an excuse to vote through her plan.
There is, just on the extension point, some ministers have this view that Theresa May will go and ask the EU for an extension. The EU will only offer a lengthy extension with conditions attached. Theresa May will then say to the Commons, well, you've heard what the EU are offering, so now do you want to vote for my deal to avoid the need for this kind of type of extension? And that might be the way that they eventually end up passing her deal, which is, you know, you can either have a 21-month extension or you can have my deal. And so all of these processes and wheels kind of begin to rub against each other. But, you know, as Fraser said, at the moment we are still very much in the world of least unlikely outcomes. Nothing has yet become likely.
Now, one theory during the rounds to get Theresa May the number of votes she needs to pass a deal is that she could please Brexiteers by promising to leave quite soon after the deal going through. And Fraser, in your Telegraph column, you look ahead to what kind of leaders the public wants these days, and you suggest that actually Moggism, how do I pronounce Moggism?
I imagine that's the correct pronunciation.
Moggies, if you are a fan of Mogg, is the way to build a winning brand. Do you think the Tories really are going to have to look to the lessons of Jacob Rees-Mogg for their new leader?
Well, I think Jacob Rees-Mogg is an example rather than the creator of a new trend in politics, not just on left, but on the right as well. I mean, about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you had these kind of Bill Clinton epigones, so Tony Blair sort of smiley people who would try not to upset too many people. And their aim was to blend in on the TV sofa, just a thing to say, I'm just like you. But they didn't really have political principles. In fact, they proudly regarded themselves as unideological. And that was where politics was back then. Now there is an exasperation with the old style of politics and a greater interest in people of political principles with whom you can agree or disagree. Now, we had this Jacob Rees-Mogg event of London Palladium on Tuesday, and, you know, it was just, even now, it's amazing to think that he sold out 2,500 tickets. I mean, why? He's got no power at all. He's quite a funny guy, but he's not exactly Tommy Steele. But I think the interest there is in people hearing politicians say what they think and not trying to modify it into what you might want to hear. Now, the same forces that are lifting up Mogg are also lifting up Jeremy Corbyn, lifting up Bernie Sanders in America. These are people who have got principles, who in the Blair era, you would have said, Corbyn hasn't got a chance because he's too toxic, he's too extreme, he believes in socialism, and that's now off the reservation. But that is now, right now, you can get Corbyn, people who don't even agree with what Corbyn does might be quite attracted to him, thinking, well, he's got integrity, he says what he believes. And now, if being hated is supposed to stop you winning power, how did Donald Trump ever get to the White House? So I think we're in a new era now where coming up with unpopular opinions isn't as bad as being bland. Now, this matters to the Tory party not because I think Jacob Rees-Mogg would or should be the next Prime Minister. I think it makes you look again at people like Michael Gove, for example. Now, the conventional wisdom of Michael Gove is, well, he annoyed too many people when he was doing the school reform, he is toxic, he is too divisive, therefore he can't be a player. Or Boris Johnson is now too hated, he's too ridiculed, he can't be a player. But if ridicule stopped you in politics, why would Corbyn have done so well at the last election? So I think I think it would be rash to exclude Boris, Gove, or anybody else because they're too divisive. Right now, being divisive is no bad thing.
James, where do you think the parliamentary party, in terms of the Tories, are when it comes to picking a future leader? And I know we're jumping quite far ahead here because we have to somehow work out what's happening with Brexit, but when you hear about things like TIG, the independent group, we had Nick Bowles on this week's magazine podcast who basically implied that were a Brexiteer like Boris to take over and win the leadership, you might see more defections. Do you think that the majority of Tory MPs want a dynamic character, or do they want someone who can just somehow keep the party together by perhaps being a little bit beige?
I think Theresa May has tried out that latter strategy, and it hasn't worked. I think there is a feeling that I think there will be undoubtedly be from all signs there will be more threats of kind of defections if people taking their ball home if they don't get their way than normal in this leadership contest. From some MPs, it will be that we might go off to TIG if it ended up being what they like to call in inverted commas a kind of hard Brexiteer. And from the other side, I can imagine activists saying that if we don't get one proper Brexiteer in inverted commas again on the ballot paper, we'll be off to form some new party. So I think a lot of this though does depend on the circumstances in which this leadership election has been fought. I think the mood of the parliamentary party will be very different if a deal has passed or if a deal hasn't passed. I mean, that's an important point to note. I also think the selection will be very different again. You know, you can't exclude the scenario that we're having a leadership contest in the middle of a very lengthy extension. I think, again, the mood there would be different. I think in terms of who is going to be the establishment candidate, Jeremy Hunt, I think, is making quite a lot of progress. If you basically ask cabinet ministers at the moment who they think it is, he is the favoured candidate of more of them than anybody else.
He doesn't really fall into the dynamic category, does he?
But that doesn't mean that Jeremy Hunt is going to win it. It's going to mean that he might start off with that. I also think one of the other big things that this will depend on is the biggest outsider to win the Grand National was a horse called Point Avon, and it won because essentially there were so many horses in the race, there was a pile-up, and it ended up being won by this 100-1 outsider. You can apply the same kind of logic to the next Tory leadership race. If there are a huge number of candidates, someone could come, you know, the William Hague group, you come as you do surprisingly well in the first round, even though you don't come anywhere near the top of the ballot, and you suddenly pick up momentum. I think that is entirely possible in the next contest.
Now, on the subject of leadership, we have news today of the independent group, TIG, have been divvying up roles, and among them, Chucker and Munna has been appointed group spokesperson, Cabinet Office and Government Policy Coordination. That's quite a lot of titles for a group that currently has 11 MPs. There was some talk that Chucker and Munna would be the leader of the group. This appears to be the first step on the way there. Fraser, do you think this is the beginnings of a party that will worry both of the major ones?
Well, it's already worrying most of the major ones. I'm actually astonished at the impact that the independent group has had. I think they've actually achieved more in 2 weeks than the Liberal Democrats have in 3 years. Certainly when it comes to, if you look at the Labour Party, are now suspending MPs that they would never have suspended before, and the Conservatives are now really worried about the threat of defections. Previously, you quite often hear it in politics, so-and-so might be disgruntled, but where's he going to go? Now that there's an answer to that question, it does change. So I think that the independent group has got some opinion polling. There is a poll by Politico today putting it at a quarter of the vote, which I don't quite believe. But still, suffice to say, if the main parties are not worried about the Tiggers, they should be. And it does seem as if, I'm not quite sure what's the matter with Chucker and Munna, where they can't quite admit that he's the leader. What did you say his title was?
Oh, I need to look it up again. It's very long.
Here we go, guys.
Group spokesperson, comma, cabinet office, comma, and government policy coordination.
Right. Now, what's the matter with saying he's the leader? I think Chucker can. I mean, I don't think he's not got a problem with being able to lead this group. He pretty much set it up as his brainchild. I don't know. Anyway, perhaps he's got some dark secret that we're going to find out about. But they seem to have appointed people to most other portfolios and have gotten not quite a leader. And if I were them, I'd keep going with it. It's very easy to mock them. And I must admit, that's my first kind of instinct. But they are already making waves. And I think, obviously, the next step is to get an apparatus to see if they could fight an election. But I think they have not finished the disruption they're going to cause British politics.
Though I suppose it is partly down to what other MPs think. The independent group is hoping to get more defections. And within the Labour Party, Chucker is still seen as fairly divisive. So I suspect that might be what is holding him back currently from getting the full title. And that's all we have time for today. Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And we also have an offer. 12 issues for £12, and you get a ticket to our special event, Who is Afraid of No Deal, at the Emmanuel Centre, 11th of March. The lineup includes Fraser and James, along with Dominic Grieve, Suella Braverman, and Nikki Morgan. To claim that, just go to www.spectator.co.uk/no-deal-offer.